Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. My guest is Stephen Brill, the lawyer, journalist, and entrepreneur who founded Court TV and Brill's Content Magazine. He's out with a brand new book, Tailspin, The People and Forces Behind America's 50-Year Fall and Those Fighting to Reverse It. The thesis is pretty simple. American meritocracy, that is, the government and society run by the people on the basis of their ability, has become the new aristocracy. Stephen, maybe I oversimplified it, but can you explain this thesis more in depth?
Yeah, I think the Time magazine and the cover story about the book, for which I'm very grateful, I think that they kind of oversimplified it. What the book does is it explains how the core values of America, of which meritocracy is one, but others such as the First Amendment and due process and ingenuity, you know, the whole spirit of American inventiveness, how all those values over the last 50 years ended up, ironically, being turned against us. And in the case of meritocracy, what happened, you know, it was a good thing. I was the beneficiary of it. I got a scholarship to Yale because, you know, suddenly Yale was admitting people on the basis of their merits, not whether, you know, they inherited money or, you know, or their parents went there. So that's a good thing. But one of the ironic results of that is that all the law firms and banks and corporations and consulting firms that, you know, hire people from the elite colleges and universities, you know, suddenly they were hiring people who were smarter because they had won the meritocracy race. And suddenly the people who were smarter were better able, in the case of law firms, for example, to defend their corporate clients more effectively and create new ways to advance the interests of their corporate clients. So, for example, they invented arbitration clauses that now mean that if you buy something online or if you have a cell phone contract and you get, you know, cheated, you can't bring a class action suit, you can't bring any kind of lawsuit against those people. Or if you're discriminated against or sexually harassed at work, you have probably signed a contract when you took your job that says you can't sue. So, you know, those are very smart lawyers who create a workaround that helps to defend their clients. That's just one small example, but that's kind of a, you know, an offshoot of what happens when you get, you know, smart people instead of, you know, people who were born on third base, you know, in the law firms and banks. You know, if you look at the investment banks, they created derivatives which ended up, you know, crashing the economy in 2008.
So I guess going back 50 years or so is when you pinpoint this. The folks that were in these elite schools because their dads had gone there, or they were in these jobs because they went to the right country club or things like that, those, they didn't have necessarily the intelligence quotient as the people in there now?
They didn't have the drive.
Okay.
You know, they didn't have the drive that, you know, they were not the overachievers that people at the top are now. And when you're an overachiever and you have a lot of drive and a lot of smarts, that's more of a reason for the community in the form of the government to create and establish, you know, guardrails so that you can't achieve too much at the expense of everybody else. You know, we always have to balance in this country the notion of, you know, competition and a capitalist economy, you know, both of which are good things. But we have to balance that with the need to protect the common good. When it gets out of balance, which is what has happened, you have, you know, the whole middle of the country alienated. And that's the middle not just in terms of geography, but in terms of the economy. And the more things work against them, the closer they become to the poor people in this country who have also been ignored. And the irony is that in the last election, we had a presidential candidate who successfully turned the middle class against the poor when the middle class was increasingly having more in common with the poor because they were increasingly, you know, hard-pressed financially. They worked in, you know, low-wage outsourced jobs. They had little job security. Labor laws were no longer effective. You know, the private sector unions jobs have been virtually eliminated from our economy. So the thesis of the book at the end is that, and the reason the book is hopeful, is that there are all these people now in different spheres working to reverse that tailspin and unite the poor with the middle class, because the real split in this country is not Republicans versus Democrats or liberals versus conservatives. It's the protected versus the unprotected. And 99% of the country, you know, the portion of the country that depends on government supplying the common good, such as a decent mass transit system or a decent minimum wage, the 99% who are the unprotected, I think, are going to unite finally and change things.
When you use the term in the book, moat, to describe the protection, and can you kind of describe what the moat is for maybe somebody who's just a blue-collar fella getting up and going to work in the morning?
Okay, well, a blue-collar person getting up and going to work in the morning, he faces a whole bunch of moats that the people he works for have constructed. For example, labor laws, really don't work anymore. The prospect of, being able to unionize effectively is pretty much gone in the private sector. As I mentioned, if he or she getting up to go to work in the morning feels that he or she has been discriminated against, they can pretty much no longer sue. They have to go through an arbitration process that is stacked against them. They can't unite with their fellow victims and bring a class action, because they have probably signed something that says they can't do it. And those are two examples of moats. Another example of, a great moat is the tax code, which is, thousands of pages of moats called loopholes that enable, the wealthy to pay less in taxes than most people in the middle class.
Does it even extend to participation in the political process? And by that I mean,
totally.
When Obama was elected, people that loved Obama thought everything was going to be great, he can do all these things. When Trump was elected, the Trump people thought he'll be able to do all these things. Nobody can move that mountain in Washington, right?
Nobody can, because money dominates politics. The biggest moat is money in politics, in gerrymandering, so that most members of Congress, they only have to worry about, someone running against them in a primary, because their districts have been gerrymandered so effectively. And they don't have to worry about someone running against them in a primary if they do what one of the congressmen who I decided to tag along with when I was doing the book, if they do what he does, which is he goes into a little windowless room in a building next to the Capitol, and for 5 hours a day, every day, he dials for dollars. 5 hours a day, that's how he spends his time, begging for money. And that's what most members of Congress do. And that can't be what the Founding Fathers had in mind. Now, why does he do that? Because the First Amendment has been hijacked to allow people to give unlimited amounts of money and corporations to give unlimited amounts of money. And this guy has to worry that some opponent is suddenly going to show up with millions of dollars to run against him.
It's something else that caught my attention in the book, and I thought of it as I was driving through our town and bouncing through potholes, is you talk about the government's focus on the development of this common infrastructure back in the 60s and 70s, and that's gone. What caused that?
Well, what caused it is exactly what we're talking about, which is the polarization and the breakdown in politics. So, it used to be that raising the gasoline tax was as American as apple pie. Every president did it up through Ronald Reagan. And the reason they would raise the taxes, we needed to improve our roads, repair our roads. And also, as cars got more miles per gallon, since the tax is per gallon, you had to raise the tax or else the income from the tax to the government would actually go down. So it has gone down dramatically since Reagan last raised the gas tax in 1993. Why wasn't it raised since then? Because there almost isn't any instance you can think of where, Republicans would let a Democrat have a victory, any kind of legislative victory, or, Democrats would let a Republican have any kind of legislative victory. What politics has become today is, if you win, I lose, rather than let's make the country win by doing something together.
And that's something that's it's too far gone to even change that, right?
Well, no, I think it's not. You have to believe in a democracy that ultimately nothing is too far gone, because if people get angry enough, really angry enough, and everybody is, you know, so angry that they organize and they demand change, you know, change happens.
Before I let you go, I have to ask you about Court TV, because I was addicted to that when it started back in 91, I believe. It was really the first reality TV I ever watched, and it wasn't this crazy scripted reality that we have now.
The only reality TV that was real.
Well, sure. But how did you tap into that and realize that at that time and place, people were interested in watching courtroom dramas unfold on television?
Well, as you know, I had been a journalist. I started the American Lawyer magazine and wrote a lot of magazine articles about, big-time courtroom cases. And I often interviewed the jurors after the fact in those cases. And the jurors would always tell me how fascinated they were by the trial, even the slow moments, even the seemingly dull moments, how it was really, a drama, and they didn't know how it was going to end. They didn't know what this witness was going to say or what the cross-examination was going to be. And it suddenly dawned on me, if I could put a camera there as a surrogate for the jurors and make everybody at home have the same experience that the jury had, maybe that would work.
Did you have any blowback from courts not allowing it at the time?
Sure, but we gradually made a lot of progress. Now, I sold that in 1998, and the people who started running it after, they sleazed it up and only did sensational trials. We did a mix of important, civil cases. We did a war crimes tribunal at The Hague. And yes, we did O.J. Simpson too, but we had a good mix. But once it became, really just, the tawdry stuff, a lot of the courts, started to reject it, which I think is wrong. I mean, I don't think they should be making editorial judgments, but they did.
Just out of curiosity, when you do an O.J. trial, is that an expensive endeavor? I mean, there were only a couple cameras in the courtroom, but how expensive is that to pull off?
It wasn't that expensive at all because, it was actually only one camera. And, you don't have to do lighting, you don't have to do anything. And now it would be much less expensive because instead of a satellite feed, which is very expensive, you could stream it.
Well, it's a fascinating tale of how Court TV came to be, and I love it. But the book here is Tailspin, The People and Forces Behind America's 50-Year Fall and Those Fighting to Reverse It. Great cover on this book, by the way. It shows a bald eagle with a red jet stream.
Something's working. The book's been on sale for, just a day or two, and it's really caught on.
Well, I can see why. It's a great book. Thanks, Stephen, for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.